are Refining Faith, and we listen to WBAI in New York City, 99.5 FM.
Ooh. Hi, I'm Billy D. Williams for WBAI listener-sponsored radio. You're listening to Night Shift, where life is like science fiction.
I'm Mike Sargent, and this is Night Shift. Been listening to Night Shift for the last few months, you know we've been celebrating our 30th anniversary. 30 years on the air, which is kind of amazing. And in that time, as I've been going back and listening to old shows and figuring out what I want to play, like I said, I've come across all these amazing interviews. We had Francis Ford Coppola, Andy Summers, Mario Van Peebles. So many amazing musicians, filmmakers, directors, writers, producers. This week, I'm going to play excerpts from two shows. First show, I actually had in the same show, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, Abel Ferrara and Ice Cube. Now, if you don't know who Phil Lord and Chris Miller are, they are a writing and directing team. Now, when I interviewed them, they had just done their first live-action film. They had kind of come to prominence for an animated film that they did called Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs that they both wrote and directed. 21 Jump Street was their first live-action film. It was very successful. This is the reboot, of course, with Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. Then they did 22 Jump Street, which was also very successful. Now, they went on to produce a whole bunch of successful films. There was an interesting debacle where they were supposed to be the writer-directors of the Solo Star Wars story, but let's just say they were removed from the project and Ron Howard was brought in and it turned out to be a mess. But they did write one of the most successful animated films of all time, and that's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Since then, of course, they're going to be doing the two sequels. They produced a number of really terrific animated films like The Mitchells vs. the Machines and the Lego Batman movie and a number of really fun projects. But it was really fun to talk to them this early in their career and just to hear their excitement. Now, Abel Ferrara. If you don't know who Abel Ferrara is, he is really an iconic director who had done a number of films, including The King of New York, Bad Lieutenant, Body Snatchers, The Addiction, a number of really interesting and often controversial films. At this point, this was 2011 when this show was. He had done, or actually the beginning of 2012, he had done a film called 444, Last Day on Earth. Really great premise. It's the last, these are the last hours on Earth, and what is everybody going to do? I really enjoyed it. It stars Willem Dafoe, but I got a chance to interview him, and I actually started my interview with him. He had somewhere he had to do, so we actually conducted the interview in a cab. So I'm going to play the trailer for you, and then you'll hear me in a cab with Abel Ferrara doing the interview as we begin that show back from 2012, in March of 2012. And then finally, Ice Cube. Well, I don't really. If you don't know who Ice Cube is, well, then I don't know what to say. Hopefully you enjoyed this encore presentation of some vintage Night Shift. This is from 2012. I'm going to play the trailer for 444, Last Day on Earth. And then we'll begin the show. And then I'll be back here on Night Shift, 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 on Night Shift.
We were talking a lot how to deal with these final minutes. And today it doesn't matter where you live or how much money you have. We are all about to face the same fate at the same moment.
Tomorrow morning, there will be no survivors. The world will end.
You think they're right?
I know they're right.
What if they're wrong?
I mean, the streets look like any normal holiday. Pretty calm, at least for now.
Oh! No! Leave that man alone!
I'm gonna smoke my cigarette, and I'm gonna die.
Sense of caring, one another, sense of shit, one another. There's a sense of community.
It's getting heavy.
We're all gonna die, guys. We're already dead.
Get on your knees and pray. On your knees and pray. On the last day.
What is wrong with you?
The end of the world, the end of the dream. I wanna see it.
Forgive me.
All we have is right now. All we have is each other.
I gotta make it a place where I'm living, even if it's metaphorical, you know. But, and then you try to push yourself or push the characters, push the story to a place. And then you want to see how you're going to react. And therefore, that's how the characters in the film react. Am I making any sense?
No, you're making complete sense, actually. Oh, okay. And so what was the germ of the idea for 444? Was it about the relationship? Was that the beginning? Or did something happen within that relationship that made you...
Well, I knew about the relationship. It's also about sobriety. You know, right now we're in the midst of being... sober, of quitting drugs, quitting drinking.
Right.
All right, so our character has that in him. We're also in the midst of a relationship with a partner who is not an addict, who does not use. Okay? Mm-hmm. Which, for, you know, and oddly enough, God bless you, son. Oddly enough, I've been in relationships a lot of times with my partner, not even knowing, not understanding, definitely. So I think that has a little something to do with, with, you know, the character flow at 444.
Well, it definitely does. And one of the things I thought was interesting is, or the meditations or the themes in there is, what do you do with what you have left? If you're facing your mortality, what do you do with that time? What's the best use of it? Are you going to create art? Are you going to visit your past? What are you going to do? Were those some of the things?
Well, that's the point. I mean, in the film, she's painting, you know, and it almost seems like, why, you know, unless you think about what is art to people. It's therapeutic. Mm-hmm. It's what they do. There's a shot of people working out and people laugh in the theater, but I understand why they're there, because that might be a place they went every day, and there's a group of people there that get together every day, and when they're there together, they don't sit and play cards.
Right.
They don't get high. They work out. So they're going to go back and do that. You know, and it's also, why would the last day be really that much different from any other day?
That's very true. That makes a lot of sense.
Because, in a sense, every day is the last day of life.
Or could be.
Could be. You know, the Buddhists, you know, the one thing we all have in common, the one thing we know, if you know anything, is that we're all going to die. And in the Western culture, it's so like, and hey, I'm guilty of it too. I mean, who wants to talk about it? I don't, you know, I'm not into conversations about it. I know I made a movie about it. But, you know, for Buddhists, that's something that you think about, you prepare for, you practice almost. You know, there's a way to die because, again, life doesn't end with death. You know, well, it doesn't end for a Christian either, as a matter of fact, if you think that way.
How did you pitch this story? What was the, you know, how did you tell this to, whether it was a distributor, investor, anybody? Like, how did you pitch this story?
I pitched definitely that it was going to be the end of the world.
Okay.
All right. And within the end of the world was going to be a relationship movie like we did. But we also pitched a new way of making a film where the me and my core group of the editor, designer, DP owned part of this film. The actor owned part of the film. And the investment owned part of the film.
Okay.
Because this day and age, you know, raising money for films is a whole new ballgame.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I also come from the school of thought that a film is directed three times. The first time when you write it, whether, you know, you're writing or working with a writer. The second time when you're on set, and the third time when you actually edit it. My question is, A,
yes,
do you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure.
And then what?
Word,
what
yes,
is...
It's...
What do you get out of each part? What's your favorite part?
Yeah, it's what part you happen to be in. I mean, my favorite part is the one I'm doing. Or that's my least favorite, actually.
Okay.
I look forward to editing when I'm writing. I look forward to shooting when I'm editing. You know.
Okay.
But they're all essential, you know. I mean, the writing... And you can only do one at a time, man. You know, it's a simple fact of life for me. When you write, you give it all to the writing. Not that it has to be 1,000 pages. It could be 5 pages. But whatever it is, you give it all, and you give... But enough that when you go to the set, you haven't left it in the writing, you know.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Okay, because you still, it's a blueprint. The screenplay is a blueprint to make a film. You know, a great screenwriter once told me there's no such thing as a great script. There's only a great movie, you know. So a great script is something to use to make a great movie.
Right.
All right?
And so, it doesn't guarantee.
No, nothing guarantees it. You got to make it. And then when you shoot it, you don't worry about editing, and you don't say, I'm going to cut here, or I'm going to, anybody here to say that, you know, is an amateur. When
right.
You're shooting every shot for all it's worth. Kurosawa once said, when you film, when you get to the point where you think you got what you wanted, that's when you keep shooting.
Gotcha.
All right. So,
gotcha.
And then in the editing, you forget everything you've done, and you start, and you look at what you really did.
Right, and work with what you got.
Yeah, because what see what you really wanted to write, and you're going to see what the actors really were
right,
about,
right.
And you're going to see what you're really about, not what you want to be about, not what you hope you're about, but what you really are about. All right, here, take it over right now. We got, how are we doing?
Yeah, we're doing good. This is 28th and 5th right here.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
The far corner's good. question. As an actor who definitely had huge success in comedy, what's your perspective on why it is a comedic actor can make the transition to drama, win an Oscar even, but it is not so easy for a dramatic actor to make the transition to comedy, except unless they're like a De Niro or somebody at a really high level? Why do you think that is?
I think, this is a very good question. But in thinking about it, it seems like comedic actors will take more chances than dramatic actors. And by taking them chances, you actually find this wider range of things. And some guys that are great at it, or comedy comes easy, but they can act their ass off, usually can translate into drama quick, you know. And there's been a lot of comedic actors who will go drama on you in a movie, and you'd be like, damn, you know. I seen Tracy Morgan do something in First Sunday where I was like, damn, whoa. So I think the range is wider, you know. So I think it's easier to dive into that. Now, most comedians really know they can do drama. They already know it, because most comedians have something a little dark inside anyway, mm-hmm. makes them funny. Mm-hmm. So they know they can do it. But most dramatic actors aren't sure about comedy. So sometimes they tip into it, or they overdo it.
Right.
You know, they don't find the groove, or the pacing is hard to get a hold of. So I think that's one of the reasons that transition is made, you know. Somebody that you take so serious, it's hard for them to make you laugh.
That's true.
But somebody who you laugh at all the time, it's easy to feel their pain when they start crying on you. You know, so it's just...
That's interesting. Ice Cube is one of the stars of the new film, 21 Jump Street. Ice, welcome to WBAI.
Yo, what's happening?
When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller, period?
Oh, man, you know, just when you're young, I'm the youngest, so being the baby of the family, I heard my brothers and sisters, you know how the family get together, everybody telling their stories. And, you know, when I was younger, I would get in there and tell my story, and it would fall flat. And I'm like, what the hell? Why? Not knowing that my life is just not as interesting as theirs at that point. But also, it was like, I need to learn how to tell a story and build it up and then get the crescendo at the end instead of having it fall flat. So I really, like, fine-tune that with my family on just when something happened, I want my story to be as interesting as everybody else's. So it's a build-up. It's like telling a joke. It's how you build up into the punchline. I guess that's my first dibbles and dabbles at it.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM.
And you were hearing interview with Abel Ferrara, who has a new film opening this Friday, and Ice Cube, who has a new film that opened this past Friday. We'll talk about both those films. I have some other interviews for you, another very interesting film that I think you should see, a film that I saw this evening as well. And Elena is actually in the house.
Hello. Hey. Yay. Hooray for me. High fives.
Chris, are you there?
Yeah, man, I was trying to get you to pull away, but you didn't hear me. Did you not hear me?
No, I did not hear you.
Oh, I was going to tell you, right after the Abel Ferrara interview, because I was right on top of that, and you pulled and you went off to everything else. But anyway, yeah, the Abel Ferrara interview, I got to ask you a couple questions. It was a great interview. So did you have to pay the cab fare? Is
of
that
course.
What you had to pay? Yeah,
that's behind the scenes. You know,
that's behind the scenes? Okay, And where'd you get off? You got off at 28th? Where was he going?
I didn't ask.
Well, you didn't even ask? I would have just followed him. Look, I was going to follow you.
You just threw him out the window.
I would follow him.
Yeah, I was like, could you just pay the fare? And I was like, anyway.
I did not. Uh-huh. And Chris, you know, the mystery guest is here.
All right.
Hi, Chris. Hello.
My favorite person.
Listen to that right in front of Elena. He says,
Elena's my second favorite person.
Oh, wow.
Second?
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Kiss her.
Elena's not insecure at all.
No, exactly. No. Elena's like, yes, I'll beat you all later. Right. You know, I called Chris earlier because I wanted
I'm
going to
start wearing underwear for you.
I don't know if you want to do that. I called Chris earlier because I'm trying to test out the streaming thing here. And
it ain't working.
No, it was working fine until, I tried to get Chris to do it. But as you ever have call somebody or they call you and then they put you on hold. And then you hear all kinds of strange noises in the background. As if he has, like, prehistoric creatures in his house. That's what I hear in the background. In the background. So I'm curious, Chris, what kind of animals do you have?
You know, I don't know. Everybody keeps telling me
that they hear, like, the animals.
Everybody that I talk to, they're like, what is going on over there? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I understand.
So I actually do think that there's ghosts somewhere in my house now. And I'm scared.
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you what the theme of the show is as well.
I want to keep talking about things, and you just keep
moving.
I
know.
Go ahead.
I know. I have a move.
You
ahead. Content.
I can't get
content.
You to catch nothing. Keep going. Go ahead.
You cannot. You cannot.
Paid the cab fare. You were able for our. That's funny, man. That's funny. You paid the cab.
I didn't say I paid the cab fare. That's your supposition. All right, can I tell you the theme of the show? All right, first of all, I'm going to say that the Abel Ferrara film, it's called 444, The Last Days on Earth, and it's about a couple, Willem Dafoe and a much younger actress who is actually the girlfriend of Abel Ferrara, interestingly enough. And they're in a relationship and the world's going to end. And it's just a definite fact. There's like a week or a few days left. So what they do, what they go through is really what the film is about. And, you know, in the background, some people are jumping out the window. Some people are going on as if nothing's happening. It's definitely an interesting film. And I'm a sucker for an end of the world movie to begin with. So I thought, would that be an interesting theme? But then I thought, we've done that. We've talked about what if you knew 2012 was the last year. We did that. Okay. And then I thought about 21 Jump Street. Now, I got to say, 21 Jump Street, I expected crap. Honestly, I expected crap because I never saw the TV series. Did you ever see the TV series?
No, I never did.
Had you ever heard of it? You've
in
heard
Italy,
of it?
It was popular, you know.
It was popular in Italy. Well, there it
very.
Is. And Jerry Lewis is popular in France. And so basically, I never saw
point
it.
Taken.
It was not, to me, it would always seem like a 80s version of Mod Squad, you know. And so I just never paid any mind. So I had no hopes for this. And it was really good. Really good, really funny, well written, surprisingly funny moments of almost like, okay, that's almost brilliant right there, that thing. And I didn't expect that at all. So I got a chance to talk to Ice Cube, who's in it, but I also got a chance to talk to the two directors and their co-directors, Chris. Very interesting. Very interesting. They're very interesting guys, and their story is very interesting. So I have an interview with them. That's Phil Lord and Chris Miller, interestingly enough. And but then I decided, you know, what would be a good theme? Because if going back to high school, we did the show already where, you know, what would you go, if you went back in time to your teenage self, what would you tell her?
To
or him? You. It was a theme. We did that theme like a year ago, a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's already been done. All right. So then I thought, you know, I got a call this morning from a friend.
No, you didn't get a call.
Yes, I did.
Really?
I got a call from a friend. And, okay. And
I didn't know you had a phone.
Unnamed friend.
Mm-hmm.
And this unnamed friend is older. okay, and is someone who never quite got it together, you know, but they're talented, you know. They made a few short films, you know, and then they wrote this script, the script they've been wanting to write for whatever, 25, 30 years. But, you know, they finally did it, and now, you know, they're a little stuck. They're not sure what to do. They're having doubt. They're about to turn 59. You know, they have a brother who's very famous and won't help them. And it's a whole interesting scenario. But what struck me and has always struck me as an artist is when you talk to another artist and they tell you either they're about to or what point they did or in any way that they've given up on some dream they've had, it always strikes me because I always feel like, I can never give up on my dream. You know, like very, you know, Shatner type reaction. But at the same time, there are certain dreams you have to let go of. Some of them big you let go of, maybe and replace with a better dream. Who knows? So I thought, you know, that's kind of what... when you hear everybody's story about when this question I always ask about why do you, you know, when did you first know you want to be a storyteller? You know, there's always some point in your life where you dream the life where you would be incorporating this thing you love as a part of what you do with your life. Does that make sense to both of you? So, that being said, the theme would be, and the question is, and I'll ask you first, Alina. Yes, I will, Alina. You're first, number one on the spot. I want to know what's the biggest dream you've given up, and what's the biggest dream you have not let go of that yet. You still intend to do this.
Okay, the first dream that I gave up.
The biggest one.
The hugest one.
Yeah, that you gave up.
You know this, so but I'll repeat it for the listeners, yes,
and for the strangers who don't know you,
for even Chris, who's probably already heard it already. But you know, the tennis was a big, huge thing. It was a huge loss to me. I mean, I know I've talked about this a million times, so I apologize to the listeners that you know. Are repetitive and they've heard this story before, but you know, I think it bears repeating. Okay. But it was something that you know that I just felt like I really wanted to accomplish, and you know,
and you felt you could.
I felt like I love it. I love the artistry of doing it. I mean, anybody that does sports like.
And appreciate that.
Yeah, I love just the strokes and everything was like so charismatic and you know, it was just like one big orgasm
of course, stroking, orgasm. Yeah. So now what dream though have you not given up? What's the biggest dream you haven't given up on that you still feel you will one day do?
Writing is really where
like
I would.
Novels,
I would never give
screenplay,
up that.
Play.
I don't care if you cut off both my hands. I would still keep trying.
It's a good voice recognition software. I understand. All right. Okay. That's very good, Chris.
Yeah.
Chris, are you there?
Yeah.
I think that's the most straightforward answer we've ever gotten out of Alina. Yeah. I've never gotten such a straightforward answer. I have some life is like science fiction for you, both as well, just so you know. But, Mr. Guest?
Can I start with a sigh?
You can. I mean, if you're not ready to go, we could let Chris give it a go.
Chris, can you start, please?
Or we could.
You let her go?
Sure.
You make me go.
She's the mystery guest.
I'm
your
the gentleman
co-host.
Here.
She's Mr. Guest. And the phone number here. Do you remember the phone number here, Alina?
212-209-2950, and please let us know
what you've given up and what you won't let go.
Yep.
And what's the name of the show? Okay.
I think Chris should go next.
I think you should go next. Boy, yeah. Girl, boy, girl, girl, boy.
I should go next.
Yeah. I want to know the biggest dream you've let go.
Well, to be honest with you, I've never really given up anything.
I understand.
That's the truth.
Too easy.
I understand that.
I have never given up anything. I believe in still wanting to do everything I've ever wanted to do. So,
like, Chris is 77.
No, it's true. I've never really felt I've given up anything because all my balls are still in the air, so to speak. What I would like to accomplish is basically, I think, if anything else, is
what's probably, the biggest dream you still?
The antique thing, but I think I ultimately just would like to just make films at this point for the rest of my life. And since it seems more, you know, possible than ever because of, you know, equipment that's out there and everything else, I just kind of have to calibrate and then just lock in and just start making, even if I make these weird quirky films that are just for myself and no one ever sees them, and then I die and then 20 years from now they're like, this guy made these in crayon. That's my fantasy. Oh, he made these really weird films and no one ever got to see them because he was out of his mind with ghosts in his house. But ultimately that's what I would like to do at this point. I've made a decision. I made a decision as of just tonight. You've now focused me and gave me the focus I needed to have, that maybe I should just be doing that.
Sounds good.
Well, that's really the truth.
Actually, Chris, I'm not even like trying to patronize you, but like I'd love to be in any of your films. So
yeah, there
for free.
You go. You'd be great as the weird, quirky person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would do it for free.
There it is, Mike.
There
what
it
do you
is.
Think of
any
that?
Any help you need.
Free cast right there. Look at that, Chris. Your dream.
Well, you know, I mean, I really admire like Woody Allen, not for his personal life, but for his filmmaking of just doing his own thing on the low budget and writing these great stories that kind of go around and they actually have kind of a theme to them and a moral stance and blah, blah, blah. And I think that, you know, you just take the Woody Allen, you know, mantra or the Woody Allen model and you bring it down to, you know, shooting your own like weird, quirky things that it doesn't have to be shot incredible, but you just, as long as you tell a good story and have some decent weird characters or characters.
Some decent weird characters. And, you know,
that's me. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, I think Chris, you're going to see more of this. I think people are going to be starting to make their own thing. I think it's changing, as we've talked about, Mike, and even making documentaries. People are exposing us to much more great information through their documentaries than we've ever seen before. And you're in the process of doing that too. I can't wait to see your documentary. From what I've seen so far, you're gonna do some groundbreaking stuff. Even though it's a topic that people are familiar with, but you're gonna give a new insight to it, which is great.
Chris is so encouraging tonight.
I
like it.
He's full of
Chris. I will listen.
He's full of zest.
He's full of life.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yes, and Chris will be here all week. Chris?
Yes.
That's very good. That's right.
Well,
nice.
I got some pills. Limitless, I think.
I understand. And now you
My mind is expanding.
Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're going to tell us a dream you gave up and one that you won't let go?
Well, I was the arranger for a band for about 15 years, a big orchestra of about 15 members, trumpet, trombone, and all of this, you know, the whole work. And I came to America and did not go back with the band. I gave that up. And I loved it. It was my profession. Still is. I play keyboard now, and I wouldn't give that up. You know, I taught a lot of people to play here in New York. And they are playing. I found jobs for people that hadn't jobs before.
All right, so now let me just make sure I'm clarify here. So you gave up being the arranger, and was that a dream that you let go, or is that a dream you just had and you were ready to let go?
That's the dream I grew up with, and I had.
You
I
achieved
for 15 years.
You achieved that goal.
And I did stay here and let the band go.
I understand.
You see?
I see.
But right now, I'm into music. I'm doing what I want. I have no boss. I'm my own boss.
Now, do you ever listen to Night
Shift?
Do you ever listen to Night Shift? Do you ever listen to Night Shift, like, loud and dance around in your apartment?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've got a sound system right here to my head. The head of my bed.
I understand. I'm trying. Oh, he was consumed.
Yes, he did have that sound system right by his bed.
Maybe he did. Hello, you're on the air. He leaned into the speaker.
Hey, Chris. Let's play with Mike's head. The Luigi!
What?
He's, you know, one of Chris's fans.
How do we play with your head, Mike?
He's, you know, Saluji.
Oh, that was a game of the Bronx.
Yes.
I got it.
Yeah, you seem to be the target of various Bronx-isms.
Well, I didn't realize. I forgot Abel Ferrar grew up in the Bronx.
You couldn't tell from his accent?
Him going to theater. Well, I forget. You know, you don't forget what everybody's, you know, origin is. I mean, there's so many directors and writers and people out there. It's impossible to know what everybody's, you know, where they came from. But
That's good reason.
Are you with us tonight, Mike? Are you okay? Did you want a pill?
Say that again. Did I want to take? Do I need a pill? No, I do not.
Do you
not
want
a pill
or something? You're like so like.
No, I'm in a pensive mood. Isn't that? Is it not possible to be in a pensive mood?
So criticism. Get the energy up, man. Look, drink some of that wild jolt.
And he's wearing black, so he looks totally hot. So, for you listeners that want to call in, it's 212-209-2950. Talk to the hot Mike, the pensive Mike.
The hot, pensive Mike. Yeah. Well, now, here's the thing. Earlier today, this was working beautifully. This streaming thing that I wanted to do. I realize that.
Great shots of you in the cab, though, coming down.
Did you get that? The cab, see, it was working in the cab. Uh-huh. But now let me try again, see if I can actually get you. And see if we can go live here. Yeah.
And we can some heavy news of something that's gone that they discovered down in the New York subway system?
Sure, and I do have some some news along those lines.
Excess levels of deadly carcinogen linked to incurable lung cancer disease was found in New York City 2nd Avenue subway construction site during a safety inspection done in November. An air sample taken underground at East 69th Street and 2nd Avenue found more than 3 times the permissible levels of silica. Tiny but dangerous dust particles dredged up during drilling construction. Sample was taken on November 9th. Results were just released today. Overexposure to silica, which has been classified as a human lung carcinogen, can lead to silicosis, a lung disease with no cure that is common among construction workers. The chronic disease can be fatal, obviously. They find them. And that is some scary news for all subway.
Chris, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I know you're reading the story, but like, what about people? Because I have friends that live around there. Like, are they?
Well, this is how they ended the article. It's actually in today's New York Post. Blah blah blah. We don't want to give them any kind of credit, but this is
from the Post.
Came up on AP. It says there's only one worker has been exposed to the high levels. They say that silica does not float in the air, but rather drops to the ground, so it's essentially impossible for it to impact the air quality at street level 100 feet above. But hey, they didn't, you know.
I mean, believe me, I'm not trying to belittle the workers, but like, you really kind of alarmed me a little bit with that.
I think it's something to be alarmed about. I think that the fact that this stuff is in the, my opinion on this is if it's in the ground of New York City, What does that tell you? That's really where I'm coming from.
So what else?
Well, it settled from somewhere. It didn't, you know, spring up from the ground. But there it is. Life. Anyway. That was the kind of world that made.
This was the kind of world that went to surgeon.
Well, I'll just read you both Mystery Guest and Elena have stories, but I'll just read you a couple of headlines that I have. Of some stories that are Life is Like Science Fiction that we'll be covering, as well as hearing from those who are out there and listening to these interviews that I have. Chinese human fossils unlike any known species. They've discovered a new human.
What?
Okay, just so you know, that's going to be covered here on the show. Then I also have, check this out, supersonic rain. Pelt's planet-forming disk. Now, you have to want to know what that actually means. So, stay tuned. Elena, you have a story?
Yes, I will begin. Rare bunny crushed to death by cameraman at German zoo. And I also have poo for tea. China's pandas brew a top drop.
Well, you pick the story. Please tell us which is...
So I get to go. No, I think the mystery guest should go on.
You think the mystery guest should go on?
Yeah, because, you know, I skipped the question, the first question, so I have to go. You're trying.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I read the extra female gene creates insatiable male sex-driving mice. Do you want
to know? Talk to me. Yes,
well,
I'm interested.
I don't want to talk about rats and mice, and
Elena, you want to take that story? Elena will take that story. You can trade with her.
Sure.
You can talk about it.
But she can have the bunny story.
She can have the bunny story.
No, I want the bunny story.
All right, well, then give her the poo. She give her the poo story.
Okay, I'll go on with the mice.
All right, go ahead.
I'll make it short. So mice born with an extra female chromosome have much greater sex drives than their typical male counterparts, according to the new research. But at the end of the article, it says, interesting, human men born with a double X chromosome often suffer from infertility and hypogonadism. I don't know what it is. Hypogonadism.
It doesn't sound
We want to look for it.
It sounds like something you want to avoid.
I can make a research about it, so we'll see. But anyway, they are typically taller, but with less developed and weaker muscles than the average male.
And they have an extra male gene? That's what does that
to you? Yes, exactly. So
that's very interesting. A double male gene renders a man who's less masculine, but a double female gene renders an insatiable female.
You should know about that.
Very science fiction. One of my favorite books when I was a teenager.
That describes Mike and it's like, you know.
One of my favorite science fiction books when I was a teenager was called Virgin Planet. And the premise was that it was a planet that all the women were just genetic clones. So you'd go to like Elena Town and you'd go to Mystery Guest Town and whatever. And they'd all just be various weights, sizes, and ages of the same type. And he is a man who crash lands on the planet. And they've been waiting for the men to come, but they haven't never seen one, so they don't think he's a man. They think he's a monster. And so he's trapped on a planet of women. So it was
very offensive.
Yeah, it's very, very.
That's a horrible.
I read that.
That's a horror.
Like four or five times when I was a teenager. So. Elena, you ready?
Sure. I think I'll do the bunny story first. Rare bunny crushed to death. I'll repeat. Rare bunny crushed to death by cameraman at German zoo. This is in Berlin. A fawn-colored baby rabbit tipped for fame
fawn
in Germany.
Fawn-colored? Mm-hmm. Is that like light brown, like Bambi? Bambi-colored?
Yes, like light brown with big eyes. So, a victim. As he was born without ears, was accidentally trampled and killed by a cameraman who had come to the zoo to film him.
Now, how can you get an assignment like that? Be just like a bull in a china shop. Go ahead. I'm talking. I'm listening.
I can't believe it. The rabbit was so sweet. It was a huge tragedy, says the manager. Davenport told Bild newspaper. The rabbit, due to be named Till, had hopped behind the camera.
Did you say T-I-L-L?
Yes, that's his name.
The rabbit, due to be named Till.
They had already had the name, had hopped behind the cameraman during filming in his small hay-strawn stall at the zoo.
The rabbit, soon to be named Till, who lived in the hay-strawn... What?
He was crushed. Wow. As the cameraman took a step backwards. So he just smushed him.
Without looking.
Several German animals have become international celebrities in recent years, including polar bear Knut, who was Cub soccer matches. What?
Polar bear Knut? How do you spell Knut there, Elena?
K-N-U-T. And accurately tipped Spain to beat the Netherlands in the final. Till's death recalls that of another German star in the making, a squirrel named Cinderella, who died in 2005 after also being trampled or on accident
by the same photographer.
but by a German television reporter.
Damn, what kind of people they hire in Germany in the media?
I don't know.
So they let reporters in and they kill the animals. That's pretty disturbing.
So he just basically smushed the bunny.
Wow.
That should be the new theme.
Sounds like a
band. Has anybody smushed the bunny?
A punk band from the 80s. Smush the bunny.
Smush the bunny.
Chris, is anything on the Ustream?
It's blank. You're broadcasting, but blank.
You don't see anything?
I said you've been broadcasting for 9 minutes.
Okay.
I was going to say something, but you were talking. You'd have to re-hook it up or something. I mean, I could refresh again, but
refresh.
Refresh 3 times.
Refresh.
Refresh and smush the bunny.
And if you go to the Night Shift Facebook page, you can get a link and you can see Elena. You can see the mystery guest. You can see the inside of the studio.
Are you filming this?
I am well, it's streaming now live on the internet. If you go to Ustream. Well, it should be. I can't see it at the moment, but you should be able to see it.
Right.
You see
all I see is every time I refresh
with
this,
all
you know,
those glasses on.
15-second commercial.
All of us.
I know, we do.
Smush the bunny. Smush the bunny. 212-209-2950. Tell us
no,
what?
No, not 2950.
Okay, there you go.
We're not in marathon. 2900.
2900.
What
I do?
You gotta put some clothes on here.
Wait, what? I have clothes on?
He's watching in real time or just fantasizing?
Exactly.
He's fantasizing.
He wants my squirrel. All right, good. All right, Mike, your turn to do this, to do a story.
To do a story.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you say the phone number here is?
212-209-2900.
You know, it's just frozen. It's not streaming. Does that make sense?
What did you say?
It's not streaming for me. It's just frozen on like...
I think it's just your connection.
My connection?
I think it's your connection. I don't think it's your connection.
Everything's falling apart in the
world. I think it is your connection. And just to remind you, you are listening to a vintage episode of Night Shift. This is from 2012. And if you're enjoying this show and you're enjoying these interviews, please consider making a pledge right now. You can call 212-209-2950. If you didn't catch that, that's 212-209-2950. Or you can go online to WBAI.org, make a pledge in the name of Night Shift. If you've been listening any time over the last 30 years to Night Shift and you've enjoyed it, please make a pledge. Show your love, show your support, become a WBAI buddy in the name of Night Shift. Just go to WBAI.org, put in Night Shift, and right there you can find out how to pledge.
All right, I'm here with Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who are the directors, respectively, of the new film, 21 Jump Street. Phil, Chris,
WBAI. Oh, it's very nice to be here. You have the most silky voice I've ever heard in my life.
Believe me, it's good.
The
and
radio
bad.
Business.
It's good and bad. Like, if you're yelling at someone, you're angry at them, they just think you're coming onto them.
I'll tell you a very, very short story. I had a friend I used to call. The receptionist was always like, oh, wow, you know, about my voice and flirting with me. So then one, he brings her to this event, and she's like, oh, you're Mike Sargent. I was like, yeah. And I was like, wow, you look different than I pictured you. I said, well, how did you picture me? She says, sexier. So,
wow. I don't know that you wanted to go out with her in the first place.
No, I didn't.
No.
So here's my question. First to you, Phil, and then to you, Chris. When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. We got a six-month lease on our first apartment in Los Angeles together, thinking that we were going to just try it for 1 second and go back and be college professors or something. I was probably the first stories I did that were in elementary school. They ran out of textbooks for us. In my reading group, we had read through all of the sixth graded textbooks. And so they didn't know what else to do with us, so they sent us to the library, and the library had a video camera. and we put the video camera to use making weird fake commercials and writing sketches and things like that, and then wheeling the television around to the different classrooms to show them. And I don't know if I learned anything academically at that point, but we certainly got to be creative.
And that was happening in Miami and across the country in Seattle at the same time. I was using my parents' giant bulky VHS camcorder that was the size of a house, basically.
It was the one with the hip.
It had a connector.
Holster for the Betamax machine.
It had a briefcase that it was connected to. And I was making my own silly little short films editing them in camera and trying to tell stories that way. So we've been doing that for a while.
But I still think that, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up, and I want to quit the business and go to art school or something. Yeah.
All right. Well, then let me ask you this, because you both have kind of an interesting career, and you met in an interesting way doing something that was storytelling, but, you were doing animation. So two questions. One, how did you two meet, and how did you know that you could work together? And two, how has being an animator helped, or being able to draw even, helped you do what you do?
Well, we met in college when I lit his girlfriend's hair on fire, and we became fast friends.
That'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Somehow, and that's when I knew that
we could work together.
We would be great collaborators, yeah, because Chris has great ideas.
He convinced me to take an animation class, and we both made a bunch of student films, helped each other on each other's films, and then at one point we said, after we graduate, we should go out to Los Angeles and try and make it. And so we did, and we got some lucky breaks. And as far as the how we being coming from an animation background has been helpful in live action, it's really helpful, obviously, from a storyboarding standpoint, where we're always thumbnailing the type of shots that we're thinking about. We're always trying to layer the shots with a lot of interesting details. And you're thinking about it from a more holistic standpoint, I think.
In a visual standpoint, right? You're trying to visualize a story, and coming from an animation background, you learn pretty quickly that that it's more powerful to tell something with an image in a movie theater than it is to say it. And so the more often we can set up a compelling visual, the better. And you asked about drawing. There's something about, we still both like to draw storyboards from time to time, and the reason is that there's something about putting the ideas through your brain through drawing. It goes through a different part of your mind. That's the best way I could describe it. And it makes you see it from a different point of view, I guess. And as a director, that's what you want to be doing constantly, is examining it from as many sides as possible.
All right, well, I'm going to preface the next set of questions by saying I'm a film critic for WBI, but I'm also a filmmaker and an illustrator. So.
Yeah.
There you go.
So then you know that completely. Yeah, does that make sense to you? Yeah.
Complete sense.
When you're writing, on the computer, it's different than when you're drawing.
All right, well, that leads to my next question. Right. I kind of come from the school that a film is made or directed three times. First time when you write it, you're directing in your head. Second time when you're on set, you're getting what you get. And then when you're in editing.
Very true.
Do you, A, do you agree with that? And B, then what's your favorite part, or what do you get out of each stage?
Yeah. Well, what we used to say on Cloudy was that you make the film backwards. First you edit it, and then you shoot it, and then right before it comes out, you finish writing.
That was the way it was in animation, but in live action, obviously, it's the more traditional version.
But the only thing that's the same is that you finish writing it right before it comes out.
We have also have a writing background, and we have a love for that. But on this one, we had a lot of fun in the editing room, trying to put together try to make each other laugh with the crazier and crazier cuts of the movie. And of course, on set, each stage has its own fun aspects of it. And just shooting with a bunch of actors like we had, with these great improvisers and really, really funny people who could just quickly think on their feet, and they brought so much to the table that it was sometimes you just sort of sit back and just watch them do what they do and be amazed. So that was really, really special and brought a lot of spontaneity and sort of it helps the movie not feel canned or like overly precious. That it feels sort of spur of a moment in places and then also meticulous in other places, and that was really neat.
Yeah, I think your number is too small. Because I think you make it once when you write it, you make it again when you cast it, then you prep it and it all changes, then you're on set and it's completely different every day, then you make it again when you edit it, and then you do put it in front of audiences and it remakes itself. And ultimately, that's what one of these is exciting, is the movie sometimes dictates what it needs to be. And you can resist it for as long as you want, but you put it in front of an audience and you realize, like, all right, yeah, that joke doesn't work. Or it has this moment, like that wriggle moment at the end of the movie, has to be in here because it makes everybody scream.
Okay. Well, let me back up. Let me ask how you two work. Do you complement each other in terms of his strengths or your weaknesses or his strengths? Or does one work more with staging, more with actors, the other one's more details? How do you guys work together?
Sure, it would be great if we had a divvy of responsibilities.
It would be easier.
But we both sort of have the same strengths and weaknesses, and we sort of try, we do everything
together. Wow.
Like, say the word together.
That is unintentional.
Wow.
It's hard to tell on the radio.
Not
we planned. Don't do weird bits like that.
But yeah, so unfortunately, yeah, we don't divvy it up, but we have a very similar sensibility to each other, and this, a lot of the same stuff make each other laugh. We have a lot of the same pet peeves, so it's great.
We tend not, one of the ways we compliment each other is we tend not to be freaking out and having a nervous breakdown at the exact same time. And I think that really helps.
That helps.
It helps to know that, like, you can put your head in your hands for 2 seconds and you have your buddy there to back you up. And the other thing that happens when you have two people is you're constantly having a dialectical conversation. So you wind up taking more disparate points of view in order to beat the idea up as much as possible. And the other thing that happens is you wind up articulating things that would be intuitive to a single director, because I have to explain to him why I really think this should be like a low angle shot, and I wouldn't have to do that otherwise. And it's a really good exercise, because if your idea is good enough, then you can probably explain it to another person. And if it's just your own whimsy and it's not supporting the story, it's harder to convince other people.
Well, actually, that makes a lot of sense, because in collaborations I've done, it's always like, well, if I can convince you, then it's good.
Then it's
if
good.
I can't,
yeah.
Then, you know.
And films are like an ultimate collaboration, you know, because you've got these actors, and they're bringing a lot of ideas, and you know, in our case, we had Jonah and Channing, who were both producers, and thinking about the movie as a whole, and not just their own characters, and so they were bringing a lot of ideas. We had, you know, producers and studio and everybody, and if you're working with people you respect and that you think are talented and fun and funny, and you're open to people's ideas wherever they come from, you can get really great things.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, filmmaking is art made in groups, and it's like music or something, you know, when you have multiple people playing together at the same time and they pull something off. It's really exciting when you watch live music. I don't think in a movie the audience is conscious of that, but I know that on the set, as you know, when you pull something off together with all that planning, and something comes across great, and you look at the shot and it's beautiful and it's funny and all that stuff, it's really exciting on the set, and it's because all those pieces happen to work together at the same time for like 2 seconds.
I know what you mean. Well, my last question, I'll try and put a bunch together. And I can make the assumption that you are often trying to make the other person laugh. But I once interviewed this abstract painter who would do all these paintings with stuff thrown on it, and it was giant.
Uh-huh.
I remember asking myself, so how do you know when you're done?
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And he says, well, a painting is never done until somebody else sees it.
Sure.
So my question is to you guys, like, beyond getting it to an audience, how do you know when you're done? Like, when do you stop?
Right.
We stop when they force us to stop.
When the money runs out.
When they pry the film from our cold, dead hands.
Yeah, we said about this movie that, like, we didn't so much finish it as we stopped working on it. And, you know, you can refine stuff forever. We had a really great first test screening. Exceptionally good.
So everybody said, don't change a thing. It's perfect. Oh. You know, you can't beat that.
Neil Moritz, who's made 50 movies, is like, you can't touch it. Right. And then we had to argue with the studio.
We could even better.
Yeah, that we could keep working on it
so
and make the movie better.
And, like, tweaking this and changing this joke. Oh, this could be funnier if we did this little thing and then we put it in front of an audience again.
Testing exactly the same.
And then we did it again. We're like, okay, this time we're going to do a little more here. We're going to do a little less. Just trim this part that's a little slow.
Exactly the same scores every time.
Like, well, maybe we're just doing this for ourselves now. So.
But that's, you know, part of it is you want to love the movie. You want to love every part of it. And I don't know if it affects the scores, but it certainly affects, in my opinion, it affects the people who watch the movie again and again and again. They can tell that it's got that handcrafted quality. And especially in a movie like Jump Street, which can be seen as a kind of cynical studio ploy to get you into theaters, you want to deliver something that feels like a handmade, almost like
something
weird
special.
Personal film. Yeah.
So what do you think? They were interesting, right?
I think the streaming is working really well now. I can see that Elena's got some clothes on now.
Yes.
Yay.
I think we have six viewers right now.
I think that the mystery guest definitely bop into the right groove.
Yes, and you notice the scarf. Very European.
Scarf is way cool. Scarf is from Italy.
A very, very European sensibilities from...
Except what does she have in her mouth? What is that?
Oh, Elena?
No, the mystery guest.
What do I have in what?
That's the microphone.
Oh, am I too close, please?
No, it's okay. It's
yeah, then I got closer for you.
Mike, what I want to ask you is, what hammer are you using? Because this is an incredible...
Isn't that amazing? It's amazing when I tell you, you're going to be blown away.
Okay,
now. All right, no, wait, now let me let you get some good... Let me get some good cinematography going here for you for a second. First of all, I'm here, and
This is all streaming live right now from my iPhone.
From your iPhone?
This is from my iPhone.
Your new iPhone, iPhone 4?
iPhone 4S. And it's just an app. All I do is press a button, start, and I'm broadcasting.
You got to be kidding me.
I swear to you.
And basically, somebody can go into a meeting now.
Yes. Son, listen to me. Let me tell you, you know who taught me this? You know who taught me about this? Now, I knew about Ustream, but I didn't know they had an iPhone app. The guy, the famous guy who did all that Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street footage, Tim Pool, right? He was here. That's him. He's the one. I said, what program are you using? He's like, Ustream. I was like, oh, shoot. I already had an account, so there it is. Now we have great streaming. Now we can get every detail. If I could close in on Elena, you will see everything.
They're gonna bop you. Simpson job.
There it is.
You don't want to reveal too much. No book is on the air.
I know. I have to plug it in though. It does use a battery.
Oh, you have to plug it in because the battery?
Well, you know. Yeah.
So this is off your iPhone 4, so all you do is you just go to the app.
I just go to the app, press button, start, go. Logged in, yes. And I'm like 2-3 buttons, I'm in. Isn't it incredible?
Incredible?
We're in the 21st century.
This is really, really incredible. I don't know where you could really, literally shoot some kind of weird movie with
this. I'm telling you.
App to make your film.
So, there it is.
I love it. I think it's happening. Nice shift on the cutting edge always. Great shot of Max, by the way. Great shot.
Oh, you caught the shot of Max in the other room?
Yes.
Now you can see
Max
the studio
in
all its fullness.
Max really is the man behind the glass.
He is.
You know, he is the wizard.
I'm gonna go back though because I'm gonna plug this in.
You're gonna go back
and I'm gonna let the mystery guest read a story. You have a story.
Oh
now.
Yes, I have it.
Yeah, tell me what's going on over in Italy.
Yeah,
I
want to
know what's happening. I want to know what's happening. Please. Your brethren. What's happening with your brethren?
Okay, it says, no joke, Italy lawyers strike for better pay, job security. So it seems there is not a strike. I didn't want to hear that. But anyway, it seems this is not a lawyer joke. Italian lawyers have gone on strike again, and they say that in their struggle for better working conditions and pay, they are looking for inspiration to not other than Mahatma Gandhi. The little lawyer who liberated India. Oh, come on. Okay, anyway. No, I don't want to be judgmental while I'm reading this. Yes, okay. I know it's my people, but I've been there and I know they're striking everywhere every time. I'm reading. So, at the protest that times resemble the children's garden party on a warm late winter day, lawyers stood their ground against against what they call savage plans by Mario Montis. Mario Montis is, is the replacement of Mr. Darling Berlusconi. So by Mario Montis' government to increase competition in their profession. The lawyers opposed the abolition of minimum fees, which the government says will reduce costs for citizens. They also posed plans to extend a fast-track conciliation procedure for minor civil cases, which would not require the use of lawyers.
Hello. Can you be a little quieter over there?
I'm sorry, I'm a bit distracted, but anyway. Everything is shown and streaming. So, okay.
People have to work things out.
Okay, I know. So we try to cooperate here. Gandhi was a lawyer. We want to, that's what the lawyers in Italy say.
Gandhi was a lawyer.
That's we want to imitate his way of protesting. Silent, well-mannered, civilized, but determined. And we shall not stop until lawyers are given back the role and the profile that they have always had.
In other words, they're like, well, we want to make money like lawyers in America do.
Okay, okay, no, listen to this. Listen, lawyers are among the most powerful of Italy's lobbies due both to their political influence and their sheer numbers.
That's right, of course.
There are some...
Lawyers strike.
Yeah.
What does that mean to society? What?
What's up?
Now, hold on.
There is a...
What if people had to work things out, you know, and couldn't sue each other? and all that. And deals would have to be just simpler.
Like by a handshake, you mean?
Well, maybe you write down specifics, but, you know, it doesn't have to be in all that legal document. It's like, you know, all right, well, anyway.
Can I read this?
Yeah, then they blew their heads off.
So Ricky Gervais concept.
Listeners, lawyers can be interested in that. The average time taken to resolve a civil case in Italy is nearly 7.5 years.
Of course, you get a couple good cases just sat.
That's why
they're putting limits and stuff, because these lawyers are getting fat.
Oh, my God.
The economy is tanking.
And says also that again, Italy was the fourth most litigious country in Europe, with 2.8 million new cases brought in 2011. So should I be proud now? Thank you.
Oh, lucky for you.
Thanks.
I should have given you the bunny story.
What's
poor
that,
bunny story.
Chris, what is that? What?
You're awful far back. What happened to the intimate shot we had? What is this?
I'm plugging it in. I have to get a... Oh, you like the intimate shot. I have to find a plug.
Yeah, well, you're always looking for a plug, man. For your hair or something?
Yeah, plug for my hair, yes. Hair? Some plugs.
Yeah, you should be thankful every day that you wake up that you're not bald.
That's a nice one.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? Every day you should just get up and just say, thank you, I'm not bald. You know what I mean?
That should be the next show's theme.
Maybe another bumper sticker.
When will Mike
go
bald?
Gandhi was a lawyer.
Let's ask for calls.
212-20. You could sell that shirt to lawyers.
212-209-2900. And then we'll talk about Mike's baldness.
The shirt, a t-shirt that says Gandhi was a lawyer.
Gandhi was a lawyer. That's a great shirt.
Isn't that a great shirt? Come on.
Gandhi
lawyers
lawyer.
All
you
over.
Heard it here first at
That's
night
right. Gandhi
we
was
now
a
have
lawyer.
11 people watching this broadcast, and I was explaining that everybody was naked, and now nobody can see anything because everyone's got clothes on. It's not making any sense.
You all need to, like, wave your hands every now and then and acknowledge the camera.
It's too
I
far
was just
back.
Reading on Facebook. We will be streaming.
We need to be right up in there.
Well, I have a tripod and a whatchamacallit lens.
I don't know what you got, dude. All I know is you got
but
your
I can
hair,
bring
and that's really that's all it's for. Every day, when you're down at the boneyard looking for things to find, you'll thank that you got your hair. Did you get that note from Danny saying that he's so thankful about the boneyard?
Jumping at the boneyard, yes, I did. I was trying to find it, actually. I tried to find that segment. Well, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. So far tonight, we've heard from Abel Ferrar, Ice Cube, and the directors, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, of the new film 21 Jump Street, a surprisingly good film with a lot of surprisingly good performances. But this is for the man who called earlier, who said he'd be dancing around in his living room listening to Night Shift.
He's not dancing anymore.
So, Elena?
Yes?
Did you have a story?
No, did you want to do one?
I didn't want to intrude into you. No. My stories are interesting, I will say that. But it's interesting that, okay, it says water from space. Maybe see if I get some appropriate music here for this. Let's see. Water from space is raining onto a planet-forming disk at supersonic speeds. These are new observations from the Spitzer Space Telescope, and they reveal that unprecedented detail of the observations at this early age of the disk's formation could help reveal which of two competing theories of planet formation is correct.
Yeah.
Do you find this riveting? Okay, this is how planets are born. Okay. Yeah. All right. Chris, are you with this? Are you with this?
I'm totally with
you. You with it? Okay, planets form when matter clumps together in swirling disks of gas and dust called protoplanetary disks around infant stars. But many details of how this works are still not known, of course. For example, some scientists think that giant planets can form in just a few thousand years, while others argue it takes millions of years. Now, astronomers led by Dan Watson of the University of Rochester in New York, in the U.S., of course, has gained an unprecedented view of protoplanetary disk at the young age of just a few hundred thousand years old. They use a Spitzer Space Telescope to examine the spectrum of infrared light coming from the vicinity of an embryonic star called IRAS-4b, which lies about 1,000 light years from Earth. So they break it down. They have the outer cocoon, they have the sonic boom, and they have the turbulent birth. So I think it's interesting that they're actually beginning to view now whatever they're seeing, of course, being 1,000 light years away, happened 1,000 years ago, but with the space telescope and without the, unhindered from the atmosphere of Earth, they can see far, far into the galaxy. Kind of wild, no?
Very wild.
Elena's like, no, I don't care.
We are more on the ground. You are into space. Chris, are you into space?
Were you fascinated, Chris?
When you come up with these incredible sci-fi facts, or however you want to look at it, life is like science fiction, and it is amazing because within like 2 or 3 days, it's all over the world, like everyone's talking about whatever it is.
Birth.
What they're going to be talking about then.
Birth of a planet.
And what about the frogs in New York City? Like the new
what
the
frogs?
New frog that was...
They just discovered new frogs? No, I didn't catch this. Do you have the frog story?
No, you put the frog story up on Night Shift.
Oh, that frog story. I thought you had some new...
No. You said the new species of frog was found in New York City.
Yes.
How he ever got there? On some boat or something, probably. I don't know.
Well, you know, it traveled. It obviously came from somewhere else.
Yeah, obviously. The frog was like, dude, I'm going to New York. And his friends are like, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to New York. Because I was flying with Mike and Night Shift and everything. And they're like, no, you can't go there. And he gets up, you see the frog up on the ocean liner. And he's like hanging the whole time, smoking, a little bit of juice and stuff. Frog smoking.
And the mother screaming, but you're just a tadpole.
Yeah, you just... Just a tadpole. You can't go to New York. He's like, yeah, I'm going to New York.
And that was an episode of, or an excerpt from an episode of Night Shift from back in 2012. I had an interview with Abel Ferrar, Phil Lord, and Chris Miller, and Ice Cube. And as you can see, we were having quite a good time on the air. Now, that was a show that was jam-packed. There was music, there was stories, there was callers, there was interviews. I have to say, looking back, it's amazing we jammed as much in as we did into 2 or 3 hours. The next show, this is from 2009, and this is an interesting show. It had a similar theme, not quite the same theme as the theme that was the ongoing, along with all the interviews and all along with all the calls and the music and the life is like science fiction stories. We had a theme. Same thing here. There's a lot happening. So enjoy another vintage episode of Night Shift as we celebrate 30 years on the air.
There are many radios, and the music or the voice is equally received by all of them. That is the way we are focused upon you. But we do not worry. We are not bound by thought. Because when we are not with you, we love you, but we don't think of you.
Night Shift.
Another time in our race, love.
Night Shift. It's very simple. And this may be very difficult to understand. Enlightening is a more appropriate word. Enlightening, because it is a forever movement through that which you call the Father, God, the Source, Creator, Creative Spirit, a forever movement. Enlightening, forever making. This moment are thinking, but what is is in this moment we are not thinking.
Nature.
We know how to use thought, but we are not thinking.
Nature.
We are not identified with thought. Well, all that is within us and of us is that which is called silence.
Science.
And the word should come in this moment. Come deliberately.
Nature.
Consciously.
It's time.
Enlightenment. A master of thought.
In the air.
Thought. Great tool. But oftentimes man has become imprisoned. Woman has become imprisoned by thought. We are not imprisoned by thought. Rather, we know how to use thought.
It only happens
when
here
as it is rising. Rather than that which is called a binding to a meeting, not a
word. It's summer.
It's just me. Are you ready?
You will be a storm. Summer.
The revolution will be broadcast only on the radio.
7 years they're not human.
7 years. You are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show?
Night Show.
Night Show.
Mondays. Midnight.
Into Tuesday, 2 a.m.
Night Show. During the shift.
Chris is there,
featuring Chris Taylor,
Danger Will Robinson, Danger,
as the voice of the robot. It's summer. It's 12:13.
Well, good night, everybody.
You want another theme, Joe?
Huh?
You want another theme?
We have an arbitrary theme for this evening?
We do have a theme, of course. We always have a theme.
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute. We got a theme?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
I don't mean the song.
Or Life is Like Science Fiction.
No, that's an ongoing. That's just ongoing. The theme is this, Byron.
Yes.
I want to know your greatest accomplishment or proudest moment and your deepest regret.
Does that include coming tonight?
Yes. They could be the same thing.
We're live.
I definitely want to hear yours, Chris. I want to know what you're proudest of.
Oh, man.
Your proudest moment.
He's still in exile.
His proudest moment. Chris Taylor.
I don't even know.
Proud for life.
Proudest moment, man.
Yeah.
Beating you, Mike.
Yeah, right.
Oh, beating you out at Stony.
That's a memorable moment. I wouldn't
Stony
call that
Brook
proudest accomplishment.
Comic-Con or whatever it was.
Icon.
Yes. See, even Joe knows. That's how deep into Joe is. Joe, like, oh, you're Stony Brook Icon. Because he's a freak. He's actually the king of freaks, and we call him by his true title. Well, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm Mike Sargent.
And I'm Joe Monsieur.
Byron Saunders.
Yeah, I'm here.
Byron, I still can't hear you. Try a different microphone. Try. Try this.
Byron, stay on that mic, Byron. That's good.
Try that one. Let me hear you.
Right. Try the purple one. The yellow one isn't becoming you.
Follow the yellow brick road.
I think that's
now
you.
We can hear you,
Byron.
Okay.
Okay.
Very good. I could hear me.
Featuring Chris Taylor as the voice of the robot.
Yeah, that's going to stick now.
No, I have stories. I have stories for you too, Byron.
I'm sure. I have stories too. I am a story.
I know you are. Right?
Don't mind me. I'm just going to take a nap. You can cue me when you need me.
I actually have a couple of issues.
You brought issues or stories, Byron?
Issues.
You say issues. What does
issues.
That mean?
I thought it was his mail there for a minute.
I will kind of wait.
Yeah, well,
for
Byron,
the appropriate
I understand
moment.
That. They bring up your issues.
Yes, I have.
Byron comes to the show
yes,
equipped with issues.
No, man, Byron, he's got issues. He's got a right.
Byron, he's got issues.
Is he having issue or taking issue?
Taking issues.
He's
got them. It's not
often Byron takes issues. So it's got
no, you obviously important. Have not hung out with Byron in off-air life. Byron has issues.
No, Chris should have volunteered and down to work the farm.
Right, exactly.
There you go.
Well, what issues could the farm master have? All right, by the way, I just had to say, I'm giving you the story, Byron, but do you remember that episode of Star Trek where Scotty gives this guy the formula for transparent aluminum?
Yes.
Whoa.
They've discovered it.
Have they really?
Yes, of course. Life is like science fiction.
That's Star
Even more
Trek
specifically,
4.
Life is like Star Trek 4.
Star Trek 4.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Well, there it is. Now, here's one of my favorites here. Give this to Joe. You can read the headline, Joe. Life is like science fiction. And here, Byron, this is for you.
Thank you. Did I forward you something of Life is like science fiction this week?
Life is like science fiction. Chris, I would give you a story, but, you know, you're on the phone. What?
I am sending you something this week about...
What'd you send me?
Life is like science fiction.
Did you bring it with you?
No, I forwarded it to you.
Ill-equipped. You forwarded it to me.
Yes.
What does that mean you expected me to bring? You didn't say,
no,
bring
I,
this.
I just
what
wanted
was the story?
To see if you were
interested
bubbles.
In it. I can't recall right
the
now.
Did you say the Satan bubble?
No, space bubble.
Byron got Alzheimer's.
Yes.
You need to have, like, tiny bubbles playing in the background.
Tiny bubbles. Byron can sing that. I know you know it, Byron.
I do.
Of course you do.
But he didn't bring his ukulele.
No,
no,
he,
not this time.
He, you know, he can do his best. John, was it John Ho? What was
Don
his name?
Ho.
Don Ho.
Yeah, John Ho. Who's that?
Yeah, right.
Isn't he the guy with John and Kate?
Hawaii 5-0.
Each one is condemned to the glass staring into space.
Book of
Each one is condemned to the glass staring into space. Each one is condemned to the glass staring into space.
Did you address the...
I understand it. Was it Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Was
it Comic-Con? Byron, you're supposed to be like on it. Yes, at Comic-Con. Speak about a Comic-Con with authority.
Yes.
Not questioning.
Avatar really
hit it big.
Yeah, Avatar's going to be
see
huge.
Joe? See James what happened,
Cameron.
Joe?
James Cameron. Yes.
All that. See, Joe?
They were very, Joe? Very
see?
Pleased.
See? That pre- see? That predominated the...
The news, the buzz?
Yeah. Of and course. And you heard on, about the Star Wars tour, right?
The Star Wars tour? You mean the concert? John, of course. I'm down. I'm there. Wherever it is nearby, we're
doing the travel.
Are you doing the travel? Let me know. So, are they coming to New York?
No.
Yes, they are.
No, what's closest? No.
Boston and Baltimore.
I'm with it.
No. They're supposed to be Carnegie Hall.
There's no
That's
date
secret
listed.
Stuff.
There's no date listed on the tour
schedule.
Don't worry, it'll be announced. Don't worry.
I have the tour schedule. We have to start booking hotels and flights.
I saw Jerry at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah,
Joe's doing the travel.
There you go.
There it is.
He's doing the travel.
We've got the inside track here on Night Shift. Did you know, Byron, that the world's first camel milk chocolates are going global?
My goodness.
Yes. Camel milk chocolates coming to a chocolatier near you.
Is that from a chocolate camel?
No. It is a plan from Dubai. World's first brand of chocolate made with camel's milk.
Wow.
Planning to expand into new Arab markets, Europe, Japan, and the United States.
Is that one hump or two?
Stop.
No, it just retains its moisture.
Two humps chocolate.
Yeah.
That's right. Retain moisture with two humps chocolate.
They're going to be two little M&M guys with humps on their back.
Hello, you on the air.
Something never change.
Maybe, can he do that call you make for the camels?
Can you do that thing?
No. Byron.
I'm not going to even
seen
try.
Seen Lawrence of Arabia ten times. I still can't do it. So, world's first camel milk chocolates. And did you know that they have up to 3,000 camels on a Dubai farm?
Just to make milk.
Yeah, on this farm, they got 3,000 camels. The company sells chocolates through a farm-attached store, as well as in luxury hotels and private airlines right now.
How does one milk a camel?
He says, we aim to be stopped. Same way you milk anything.
You should get one and have a demonstration down on the farm.
Camel milking contest.
There you go.
What do they call the guy that milks a camel? Not a camel jockey. What do they call him? All right, here it is.
A milk dud.
Stop. We aim to be the Godiva of the Middle East, said Van
Alsmik.
His name is Almsik. I wouldn't want that name to be making chocolate for me. It's a luxury product. So we will never be in supermarkets. The plan is to be in one mall in each UAE city.
United Arab Emirates.
That's right. Camel milk contains 5 times more vitamin C than cow milk, less fat, less lactose, and more insulin, making it a good option for diabetics and the lactose intolerant.
Well, look at that. You can have your insulinated chocolate.
Is that... Insulin infused, we could say.
Chocolate.
There it is.
But is the camel insulin compatible with the human system?
They don't release any of their findings. What's the phone number here, Bern?
Get on board the Night Shift shuttlecraft.
Get on board.
Joe, yes.
I'm curious what answer you will give me for your greatest accomplishment, or your greatest accomplishment, and your deepest regret. Can you tell me?
We should patent it and like have it on an alarm clock.
Howling Indian alarm clock.
The Night Shift Howling Indian alarm clock.
Exactly. What does he do? And it snooze, he just goes, all right, go ahead.
Do you want them, womp them?
Exactly.
I got to see where that was.
So go ahead, Joe.
I don't know, I'm thinking about it. I've had a couple, I'm weighing them out.
All right. Which you want to tell me first, though?
Huh?
Which are you going to tell me first, the greatest?
I don't know. I'm thinking.
You're thinking. All right.
Thinking.
Byron?
My greatest accomplishment.
I think I know your answer. Okay.
Benjamin and Brandon.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's
though,
the best
course,
I've done.
Byron's
my best work yet.
Best
and
work
I'm proud yet. Of it.
I understand. Okay. Great answer, Byron. And your deepest regret?
Oh.
That French woman?
Yeah.
You let her go.
I let her go.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the deepest regret would be, I think,
Is he
plays French music.
Exactly. Yes.
I don't know. I'm not so sure that I've had any kind of deep regret other than...
Well, you know, if in the pool of light regrets,
yeah,
what's
know,
the heaviest
I
one?
Know, I know.
In the pool.
The pool of light regrets. Yes.
In the pool as you swim.
In the pool of water. Which molecule is the heaviest of the water?
Shut up. Shut up, my stupid man. You know, I listen back to tapes and Joe, you're a fool. That's what you know, that Byron, he rivals you. Go ahead.
There are moments we have.
No, you know, Mike, Joe actually is much more honest than you give him credit.
On it. What does that mean?
He's honest.
Like,
Joe's
on
honest,
the bowl?
Man. He gets
he
better reviews of films than you do.
Oh, thank you.
That's all I got to say. You know. Go back and listen to him. Joe's always on the money with his reviews. He's always on the pulse.
Keeps those checks coming, do you, doesn't he, Chris? All right, so go ahead. Byron.
Yeah, well, I guess I could take a stab at a couple of them, but I guess if I take
you know,
the
you know,
moment...
the one that you would linger on a minute. If I brought it up, Byron, yeah. Too bad you never, you know, milked that camel. You'd linger and you know.
All right. 19...
Picture it,
80,
Sicily,
1987. 87. 87, 88. The close of my... theater company.
Mm. Now, what was the regret there?
The regret was that I wasn't able to keep it running. It was
okay.
A very good
okay.
theater company.
Okay, okay.
And had many successes. And
out of business.
Was,
bankrupt?
No.
Non-profit. You don't bankrupt anymore.
Forced out of business.
Forced out of business?
Yes. By
Simon Legree.
Unscrupulous. Producers.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's something to be discussed, but I'll just leave it at that.
I understand. I understand. You were a victim of corruption.
Victim of yes.
corruption.
Misdeeds by other well known.
You should have probably talked to the shadow first. He could tell you.
But you know something? I have no regrets.
You have
I have
no
none. Because.
I
as
you did
result,
what you did. It was good what it was.
Yes, sir.
You are who you are.
And as it was, and as it is now, I
as it
is,
wait, wait.
I
as
am
it
a
was,
better person.
And as it is now,
yes.
That could be like your sign up, like Walter Cronkite. As it was, and as it is now, I'm Byron Saunders.
And that's the way it
and,
was.
Exactly.
That's the way
as it was, and as it is now, Byron Saunders, WBAI. John, tell him to clear his throat.
Listen, what
John,
you
clear your throat.
Spit, John.
What you think of the movie Dillinger, Joe?
Dillinger, you mean Public Enemies.
What?
You mean Public Enemies.
Yeah, Public Enemy, right.
Yeah, whatever.
I liked it. I thought it was,
what'd you think of it, Joe?
I thought it was good.
Was it good, Joe?
I enjoyed it.
Give us your review because you're on it, Joe.
You were there.
If you say it's good,
then
it's good.
Late. As usual.
No, I didn't show up late. I was in the beginning. I just stood for a while before I pushed my way in.
There you go. He pushed his way in there because he threw his weight around.
Good.
I like
it, Joe.
There were a couple of problems.
What's your feeling, Joe?
Listen, calm down, you. Go have a drink. Is the bar open yet, Tony?
The bar is opening. Bar's open. Byron, can you get the ice cream, Byron?
Way to go.
Right. The one thing I was only going to comment
on
that you know, Michael Mann uses the red camera now.
Yeah,
red camera.
And
well, he was trying to get a retro feel.
Right, but the problem was, while the technology is almost there, still in those quick action sequences, there was some blurring and stuff going on.
I thought a little strobey.
Yeah.
In the action sequences, a little strobey.
you know, I can give you my review, Chris, but it's not, of course, as good as Joe's.
But I really like Johnny Depp. Again, another good
Joe, character. You're not giving a good review.
Another good character.
Johnny Depp is an amazing talent.
He always pulls something different out of his bag.
I saw the trailer for Alice in Looking Glass.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. But that's wacky Tim Burton, too.
Yes, of course. But they're back together.
Yeah.
It's Tom here from the Bronx.
A nice comic.
Tom. What's happening, Tom?
I'd like to say that I heard you talk about the camel milk.
Yes.
And I think that everybody over
Tom sounds like Joe Franklin.
UAE would really want, a Clark bar.
Joe Franklin.
Exactly. Okay. Hello, you're in the air.
Clark. But hey, Joe, how are you?
Hello, you're in the air.
Hey, Joe.
Yes.
But Public Enemy,
it
missed on the political implications,
right? How
do you do that?
How do you gargle as you talk?
Whoa. What are you talking about the political?
Well, this was an underclass social class who was a threat to the productive middle class. And the productive middle class.
They Robin Hoodized it a bit, right. If that's what you're trying to say.
Robin Hoodized.
No, so, but the productive middle class.
Did they glorify those criminals? Comfort. That's not original. Yeah.
I think they came. I think they.
He was glorified in the time. He was living large. As
he was a folk hero.
He was
a folk hero.
Because he never killed anybody.
That's right. He's like Joe Masseri. He's a folk hero. And he never killed
out.
Anybody.
He took the easy way out instead of working hard for his, you know.
It's
comfort.
Not that easy, you know, to be running from the law.
Planning bank robberies.
Not to canonize him or anything.
But we each have skills, you know what I mean? It's how we put them to use.
Joe was a criminal before he came
in. But listen, you work for your 50-inch big-screen television, right?
I don't have a 50-inch screen television.
Well, Mike did.
I'm waiting for the truck to show up.
Damn right. Mine is.
He won it!
And you enjoyed
he won it in
right?
a raffle.
65.
He didn't work for it.
I worked.
And you enjoy your Blu-ray, right?
I enjoy it all.
Yeah, and you earned it, right?
That's right.
And so someone like that would have to be a threat to you, right?
No, he wouldn't kill me.
He was robbing banks. He was robbing banks. And he didn't take the people's money.
The money's insured.
Yeah. Yeah, but
he got just 48 hours.
Yeah, and what's the difference between him and all those guys at the banks that failed and are still talking about getting their freaking bonuses?
I think they robbed even more.
Well, true words are never spoken. A man with a briefcase can rob more money than a man with a gun.
Sean Connery, Robin and Marion.
Yeah, but if it's not a trend, it would break the whole system. The banking system would collapse.
Listen.
By the way,
can you tell me yourself?
Can you tell me your greatest accomplishment, sir?
Falling into the night shift.
My greatest accomplishment?
No, seriously. And your deepest regret.
I regret that I didn't take up with my eighth grade math teacher.
I understand.
And you know, I was interested in math. When she hit me with the hypotenuse, C squared is equal to A squared plus B squared. I had orgasms, you know what I mean? But I was like the only student, so she fell in love with me. But I didn't realize it.
Oh,
I understand.
Who knew?
And
I was too young. I was just like 4 years old, you know?
I hesitantly ask your greatest compliment.
That was it.
I understand.
C
squared
is equal
to
A squared plus B squared.
Yes, having orgasm to... you know, algebra. I can understand.
Algebra,
that.
Yeah.
This guy traded in his vibrator for a calculator.
Yeah, when I hit the negative infinity.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello,
who else is here?
How does he get louder?
I don't know. He gets like he's got special flying. Yes, who else is here?
I think it's me. Am I here?
You are partially here, sir.
Who are you, sir?
Who is that? Come on, Byron.
George.
Hello. Yes, right. George.
Oh, George. Okay.
Hi, George. How are you?
I would like to know if there are any people listening now who heard the two original plays from 9 to 11 p.m. and would like to hear their reaction.
I didn't get a chance to
hear. The Barica Edwards plays.
Yes.
Who?
Barica Edwards.
Yes, this is true. But Barica.
Paul May wrote it. Barica
yes,
directed.
Yes. What a terrible actress. Very flat. Anyhow, I would like to hear if other listeners
listen,
their reaction.
Give
to
them
it.
Your email, and they will email.
I don't have an email. So
why not?
Give me a phone number, and they'll call you.
Twitter them. Quit.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah.
It's like I got to get in that last script.
Yes, it's Tom again.
Tom,
how are you?
When the president meets with Corelli and the professor, will Marianne and Ginger be there?
The Corellian professors?
No. Yes, Corellian.
Do they represent the Krell?
Technology.
Will Marianne and Ginger be there?
The Krell advisors.
That's right. We got just 48 hours. That's when the groceries run out.
Obama negotiates Krell technology.
That was funny because Jon Stewart this week took Obama's speech that he gave about health care reform.
Right.
And you know, he started talking about the red pill and the blue pill.
Did he? Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden he started paralleling it with the Matrix kind of thing.
I love it. I love it. Life is like science fiction.
He took lines for his speech that were like, and at one point, Jon Stewart's just standing there going, so the health care reform is the Matrix?
I love it. Life is like science fiction.
Hello, can you still hear me?
Sometimes we hear you, sometimes we don't.
Intermittently, sir.
Tom, I got a question for you. I want to know your greatest accomplishment and your deepest regret.
My greatest accomplishment is just working 33 years.
Like keeping a job for 33
and
years.
And the regret, I didn't hit the lotto.
Okay.
Anyway, I'd like to say...
Did you spend a lot of money? Like, you regret that you spent, all that damn money?
Yeah, I just didn't hit the lotto.
Hey, baby.
Well, what you doing with all that money, Tom?
It ain't there anymore.
Well, what did you dream about?
Did you picture, the two of them, at the same bar?
They're hosting their own show.
What's that?
Be very nice to Starbucks.
Or buying WBAI radio.
You would buy WBAI radio.
If I had the money, yeah.
You would be better off opening up your own radio station, sir.
There it is.
No, you'd have to be specific. It would never suffer.
What will be Tom's broadcasting policy be?
Yes.
Wait,
if
I'm
the best darn station,
what
world has ever seen?
Is your proudest moment?
My proudest moment, I won't reveal it yet, but okay. I do.
I know you have.
I have several.
Yes, of course.
Will Marianne and Ginger be there with the professor and the president?
Sometimes taking a call can be the deepest regret.
Short term.
I'll take a call. Hello, you're on the air. I'm going to ask Chris.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, Mike?
Hey, who's this?
This is Frank.
Hey, Frank.
What's going on? I got a funny story for you, Mike.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, I was up. Well, I live in Astoria. There was a festival going on on Saturday. And you know the music that you play in the background?
Yeah.
A lot of music you play? Well, this lady was selling some tapes, right? And she had a lot of the music that you have on I guess she was playing on a tape cassette. And I said,
what?
I would like to buy that. I told her I would like to buy it.
Yeah, I said that?
She said, no, I'm sorry. I can't sell this one to you.
Okay.
I said, why? She said, oh, it's the only one I got.
Okay.
Like, so why are you playing it? You know, you're playing it like. She's like, oh, listen, I'm sorry, I can't sell it to you. This is mine. I'm just playing it for now.
Get away!
So I said, where did you get it from? She goes, I listened to this radio show. And I said, would it be on WBAI? And she looked at me with this face like, holy, you know what? You know about that? I said, yeah, I listened to it too. I've been dying to find a CD or a tape.
I know what I'm doing next year.
Oh, shoot.
But she had it.
The street festival.
I didn't get to talk to her.
She was playing Night Shift.
It was like playing Night Shift at the festival.
She must be one of those rare listeners who got her CD.
Wow. She didn't tell me where she got the CD.
Well, it's obvious where she got the CD.
Yo, did you hook up? No, she's a little too old for me.
Too old.
Yeah, she's about...
She was a cougar.
She's a little cougar.
She's a cougar.
Yeah, she's a little past cougar stage, actually.
Past cougar.
Ooh.
Retired cougar.
Yeah, retired cougar.
Ex-cougar.
Yeah.
I understand. Well, sometimes, you know, you just gotta, you know,
suck
go
up
with the flow because, you know, she listens to Night Shift.
Well, she listens to Night Shift. Yeah, she got the music, man. That's what I want.
You need to pledge. Did you ever pledge? And were you supposed to get?
Yeah, I pledged before.
And you never got the CD.
I've never gotten the CD. I never knew. I've gotten a one of those WBAI shirts.
Yeah, you got one of them, but you
never
got
the
music.
You never pledged for the music.
Yeah, you got
I didn't pledge for the music.
All right, well, we're going to be having it next week. I'm going to be offering.
Next week, oh, yeah?
Next week, yes.
All right, cool. I need to
make sure they go out myself.
Yeah.
Because I can't take another barrage of like, oh, I got to get a CD. I got a CD.
Is that your biggest?
But it was so, Mike, it was so weird to hear the kind of music you play on your show at the festival. I was like, wow, it was blasting and it was loud too. Everybody could hear it.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like,
I can't tell you this one.
She's like, no, that's mine. He pulls out a shotgun. Don't touch my Jeff CD DJM.
I wonder if she got that from pledging.
I'm certain she did, Ben.
Yeah, I bet you she did. You see, she was like, kind of like, you know.
She was like,
she didn't want to give me too much information.
Exactly.
She's like, get away from me.
The secret tapes.
She's like, go away. This is my tape.
This is like, what? You know about BAI? Officer!
No, but it was strange, man. Wow. She was too secret.
Yeah, that's
man.
Probably one of the only people that are listening.
Come on,
you know?
I was going to say.
She's probably, you found the one person that listens.
Exactly. She's strange. Of course she listens to the show.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was pretty cool, man. Oh, and the festival was nice, man. I don't know if you guys.
Which festival are you talking
about? The Astoria.
The Astoria Festival, dude.
It's like
called the Astoria Festival?
Yes.
Well, no, it's the Brazilian.
It was,
oh, really?
Yes.
You went,
Colombian
you went?
Astoria Festival. No, I read about it. I didn't go.
You didn't
go. And the women are awesome out there.
You're a man about town.
Yes, but I'm a Brooklyn guy.
And Joe, why didn't you go? You live in Queens.
Joe was sleeping.
Astoria is like on the other side of the planet from where I am.
Joe, you should have went to Astoria, man. It was happening that day.
Yeah, Joe, you should have went. Why'd you go, Joe?
Because I did not need to go get my wife in a sari. Thank you very much.
Stop. Be nice now.
There you
I hope
go.
They're waiting for you downstairs. Ready to...
Oh, no,
that was not funny.
No. Don't make fun, please. This one's funny in
here.
Okay. Hey, Joe.
What?
What happened to that German girl? Talking about hooking up. Anything happened there?
German girl?
Yeah,
what about
girl.
That German girl you're going to hook up with, Joe?
Anything happen?
You mean the
German girl
Mike
Joe?
Had on the show?
No.
You
brought down
German
the two...
Girl.
Didn't you bring down two girls, Joe?
They weren't German.
No, there was a German girl. Oh, she was half Greek.
No.
Yeah, that was Leah. That was Leah.
From Astoria,
that was Leah. But you felt she was going to hook up with Joe? She was enjoying Joe.
Well, I thought Joe was interested.
Well, Joe is...
Joe was interested, that's right.
Joe always makes women feel wanted and desired. Part
because
of his charm.
I am the most interesting
you see
man.
The
part
people
of his
make it
charm.
Up, Joe, when they listen.
You didn't bring that thing yet, huh?
No.
Make
and
it
we
up.
Can't even go online because we're down. So.
Are
no,
we
we're
down?
Not. No.
We're
no,
up.
No.
We're broadcasting.
We're broadcasting.
Yeah, but keep get on. See, that's it.
Oh, you mean we can't get online here at the station?
Yeah.
But we're broadcasting online.
Yeah, you're broadcasting.
So you cannot
online.
Play the trailer for a third.
But we're not online.
But you're broadcasting.
You cannot play the trailer for a third.
We're sort of on
the radio station.
What was her name? Leah, right?
Leah. Yeah.
Remember when she got real earthy? She said, I have to have a cigarette.
Yeah.
And
I have to,
you have to give me a steak.
Yeah.
She was digging Joe, man.
It was weird.
Yeah, I did. She was. She was like,
digging Joe?
Your friend Joe is hilarious.
Joe has that.
I said, yes. He's a professional clown.
He's a dating girl named Leah.
Did you?
Yes.
L-I-A or L-E-A-H?
L-E-A-H. Brazilian girl. Hot.
I understand. Hot.
Who knew?
Hot, Brazilian. Hot.
I wonder why he was in Astoria. He was looking for a replacement.
Exactly.
And Joe,
like,
what about the roller derby girls? What happened there?
Yeah, what happened
there,
Joe?
You had an interesting life.
Joe has a very interesting life.
They had a whole big turnover, so I haven't heard from them in a while.
Joe has a very interesting life. He brings on actresses, roller derby girls.
The roller
German
derby
girls.
Now, Leah was your... Fine, not fine.
She's my find. Yeah, but you found quite a few
even
yourself.
Even a blind squirrel can find a nut.
Even a blind squirrel can find a nut.
Hey, now, how about Judy? What happened to her?
Judy?
Yeah.
The actress. Judy.
Oh,
yeah,
Judy Mayer.
Judy Mayer.
I haven't...
Go to her website and tell you what's going on with her. Judy Mayer.
Whatever. Well, we want to know what's happening with her from you.
Joe.
I cannot...
Your fans are trying to ask you in a nice way. Joe, did you hit that? What about that, Joe? Did you hit that? Did you hit that? What about that one? What about back then? Joe's a good boy.
Unfortunately, I don't have the scorecard or black book that Mike Sargent does.
No, wow. No, I'm retired.
Wow.
I'm retired.
I'm feeling that Joe doesn't kiss
the I just look back on the time when things were different.
That's what Stewart was going to be.
Like Wilson Morales said.
Lieutenant Stewart.
Like Wilson Morales said.
Like Mike Wilson Morales said.
Has commented on several occasions, Mike has a girl for every genre movie.
Is that what he said?
He's got the Asian girlfriend to take to the Asian movies.
Yeah.
He's got the Latino girlfriend to take to the Latino movies.
And why not?
So,
and why not?
Mike's women are like
looking
excessive.
For a Lithuanian. There's a fest coming up.
Mike. Yeah, I really dug Monique, Mike. She was
Where,
cool.
What happened to the AC here? What's the deal? Max.
What is it, getting hot, boys?
It's like ridiculously hot. Why am I so hot?
Just
Max.
48 hours and then you die. That's when the growth
Are you hot, Brian, or is it me?
I'm a cool guy.
You're a cool
Mike
guy.
Mike getting all hot.
Joe, you're not
collar.
Hot? You're not hot? I'm hot.
But it's not as frigid
we need
as
some ice.
Gets in here.
I'm going to have to go get some ice.
Yeah.
Brian, are you going to get the ice, or do
okay,
I have to go get it myself?
Okay.
Get the ice, for God's sake.
All right,
Brian.
I'll be back.
Help us.
Mike, where's Elena today?
Elena
is in Ireland.
And she's gay.
Elena is in Ireland. What the hell's going on?
Exactly. Elena's in Ireland.
Elena is in Ireland.
You know, if you can't strike oil here, you got to go someplace else.
Oh, wow. What does that mean? Whoa.
It means what it means.
You can't strike oil here.
So, what is she doing in Ireland? It sounds like wormwood.
Striking oil.
She's drilling.
She comes back with a... You sound bitter,
though.
Joe.
Huh?
You sound bitter.
No.
Did you hit that joke? Why is she in Ireland?
Did you hit it bitter?
Did you hit it too hard, Joe?
Sent you to Ireland.
Oh, man.
She's an exile.
Well, you're tuned to Listen Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM.
And 2 o'clock yet.
I'm Mike Sargent, and this has been Night Shift. If you're still up and you're still listening, then that means you're enjoying this. So that means that you should try and make a pledge right now. 212-209-2950. Make a pledge. Become a WBAI buddy in the name of Night Shift. That is really the best thing you could do. That would really show that you've enjoyed any time over the last 30 years you've been listening to Night Shift. If you've enjoyed it, please make a pledge. Become a BAI buddy in the name of Night Shift. Until next week, I'm Mike Sargent. And life will continue to be like science fiction.
Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at wbai.org/donateyourcar. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit wbai.org/donateyourcar.
The second round of Democratic Party primary elections will be held Tuesday, August 23rd. Congressional and state Senate seats are up for grabs across the New York City region. I'm John Tarleton. Please join me for a special edition of the Independent News Hour from 5 to 7 p.m. on August 23rd. Myself and co-host Amber Gagarin will speak with candidates, community leaders, pundits, and voters like you about who is best suited to represent New Yorkers for the next 2 years in Washington, D.C. and Albany. Again, it's an election night special edition of the Independent News Hour, August 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM.